Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, March 31st. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's time for the bird show today. And I got to be honest with you, seldom have I been so excited to do a bird show as I am right now. Yes, we'll give you the latest coronavirus news. Yes, we'll keep you posted. If the world ends during the program, we'll break in right away and tell you about it. But for the next hour, theoretically, Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here to talk about birds. If you have a question, let's just relax and take a step back. We'll talk about some birds. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart, your birding questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds on the show today, and we're welcoming Rich Guthrie, who is a regular, and Julie Hart, who is here once in a blue moon, or at least this once. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Julie Hart is the New York Breeding Bird Atlas Project Coordinator. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. She has a focus in bird conservation and citizen science. And we've talked about the Breeding Bird Atlas Project before, and we'll do it again. If you have a question about birds, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, but the number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, welcome, sir.
Hey, Ray, thank you very much.
Thank you for doing this over the phone. And Julie Hart, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you here. How's the Bird Atlas Breeding Bird Atlas project going?
It's going really well. We have thousands of observations coming in like every day, pretty much, and we have over 700 volunteers. And I think people are really looking to the birds to help them cope through these difficult times.
And this is great. You know, a lot of people are at least bound to their properties or wherever it is that they are. And one thing you can do is take a look out the back, even if you're in an urban area, and check out the birds. So that's very nice, Rich.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're there. No matter where you are, you look out and there will be birds. And the opportunity to just take your time and observe them, learn from them, and enjoy them is right here at our doorsteps.
We have a couple of emails here we'll start with, and then we'll jump on the phones. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. This one's from Patrick. Patrick says, last spring I watched a crow drag a still-living chipmunk into the road. Guessing the chipmunk got too close to the nest, because as far as I could tell, the crow never ate the chipmunk after it got hit by cars. That's the first one, not really a question. The second part of it is, when will the blue herons be back in the Berkshires? And Rich, why don't you go first?
Okay, well, the crow will first of all, chipmunks will go after birds' eggs, and in fact, even baby birds.
Right.
It's part of their nature. The crow obviously is concerned about a chipmunk or any other a mammal nearby its nest or any other bird. And so it's taken the protective measures to, you know, get rid of it, move that thing along. And they're not at all reluctant to chow down on a chipmunk. That's well within their diet and menu items. So I'm surprised that maybe a car came along and something spooked it and kept and moved it away from the chipmunk on the road. I don't know why it would have taken it out there, but but in any event, it's not out of the ordinary realm where a crow will prey on a chipmunk if it can get a hold of one, and that's not easy, make it a regular meal.
Mm. And then what about the blue herons? Maybe Julie, do you know about anything about them in the Berkshires?
Yeah, I know they're starting to come back. They've already made it up the Lake Champlain Valley. I saw some flying over yesterday here in Albany. So they should be arriving in force in the Berkshires any day now.
Okay.
And when they do, they set up housekeeping right away. They don't dawdle. They don't waste any time. They set up their territories on the top of these spindly, how they ever managed to get away with their trees, and raise a family on this platform of loosely connected sticks. It's incredible. Yet they do it, and they do it in colonies of maybe 5, 6, 10, 20.
Yeah.
Remarkable birds to watch.
They are, and they're majestic. You know, one bird that I've never seen in my neighborhood, we live in a suburban area outside of Albany, is a turkey. Well, I was sitting on an easy chair dozing yesterday or the day before, thinking about the days when there was baseball on TV, and there was all of a sudden screaming from some of my daughters. There was a turkey back there.
And wonderful.
How are the turkeys doing?
Well, it's hit and miss. The turkeys last year had a rough year of it, and that's where this year's numbers are coming from, last year's production, last year's crop. And it was a tough year for turkeys, but they go through this periodically. I mean, ever since their resurgence here in New York and New England,
right,
over the last 40 years when they were zero here to begin with, I mean, at that time. And so now they're here, and they have good years and bad years. Last year was not such a good year, so there are fewer of them in a widespread pattern. Locally, some of them did very well. They were able to nest successfully and raise a nice big brood. And so some communities will have a healthy, hardy population of turkeys. Other areas will be wondering where they all went. But they'll be back. They'll be coming. And what's happening there is you're probably finding yourself a tom turkey who's looking around, finding one of those yet unattached females.
That's a great point. Rich Guthrie is here. Also, Julie Hart of the New York Breeding Bird Atlas Project. The turkey breeding season, is it about time for that, Julie?
Yeah, a lot of the game birds are starting up coming in April. They're going to be they're courting and starting to nest. And they're getting underway right now. A lot of the game birds, so also the ruffed grouse and some of the, you know, woodcock and other species like that have some really remarkable breeding courtship displays. I think most people are familiar with wild turkey displays. But some of the other species also have really remarkable flights that they do, where they're basically dancing and calling in the air. Fanning out their tails or drumming their wings. So you know, it's a nice time to be in the forest.
You know, my producer is really, she is overzealous, and she has notes for me. And she says that while you were working as a field assistant in Vermont, you saw the figure eight courtship display of the male ruby-throated hummingbird. What does that look like?
Yes. Yeah. The male ruby-throated hummingbirds do this huge figure eight. It's actually it's more of an infinity symbol, so it's like a figure eight on the side, and they'll swoop up and down, and it's really big. I mean, it's like 20, 30 feet across, and they just do this rapid sweeping and chattering as they do it, and they'll go back and forth for a few minutes in front of the female to show her how fit he is.
And the females, for the most part, are they're okay with this?
Yeah, they're watching and assessing. Do I really want to pair up with this guy or not? So that's part of the game.
Interesting. All right, one more email, then we'll take a break, and then we'll jump on the phones. Rich Guthrie is here. Julie Hart, the number is 800-348-2551. Kurt wrote in, one, when do duck eggs hatch? Well, let's start with that one. Richard.
Well, duck eggs, first of all, they're just now, the local ducks, the mallards, not quite yet the wood ducks, but and the geese, the Canada geese, they're just a big duck. They're just beginning to make their nests starting to lay their first eggs, and they'll lay maybe 8 or 10 or perhaps a few more, and then they'll start incubating them. Since ducks and geese are precocial, that is that they stay in the egg until they're fully ready to get out and be independent once they dry off their feathers, they take a lot longer. So I would say probably in the order of 24 to 28 days in the egg incubating. Now, that doesn't mean starting the first egg today. What they do is the Canada goose or the mallard will hold off incubation until all of the eggs are in the nest, so they all develop together and hatch out roughly the same time, within a day or two of one another. So that they can all jump out of the nest, get into the water, and follow mama around as they grow. All it's of one extended family, one big family.
All right. And then very quickly, we're a little overdue for the break. What's the best food for songbirds?
Birdseed.
Yeah.
A couple of things that I like. First of all, is any natural food that you can get. That is natural fruits or flowers, berries and the like. But also things like cracked corn, black oil sunflower seed, and millet, suet, and peanut butter.
Ah.
Those things right off the top of my head is a menu that would serve a wide variety well.
All right, let's take a quick break. Rich Guthrie is here. Julie Hart is here. We talk birds on Vox Pop until the world ends, and then we'll let you know. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back. Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's Birds Today. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart join us via the telephone. We're still doing this physical distancing here in Studio A, but someday they'll be back in the studio and it'll be a great day. All right, now, if you've listened to this program before, one thing that Rich does very well is identify bird sounds. And so every now and then a listener will send us some audio. And then we play the game we like to call Bird Brain, in which our brilliant bird brain picks out what bird song this is, and this one comes from Patrick in North Adams. Are you ready, Zach the engineer? Hit it.
Oh, all right. We got it.
That's a parrot.
That's it. That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. That is clearly a Carolina wren that's singing out there in the background.
Oh, nice.
The Carolina wren is a newcomer, more or less, within the last few decades. And you say that's up in Vermont. That's even a more recent arrival up there.
Is it Vermont? No, North Adams, Massachusetts. Yeah.
Same thing. seriously, they are new to the area, and they've expanded into the higher elevations and up into Vermont and the like. So the Carolina wren, delightful song. And what's nice about them is they start singing early. That clear tea kettle
yeah.
song that they have.
All right. Well done and well played, Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Let's go to the phones. Allison in Glens Falls has been waiting some time. Allison, thanks for being patient. Oh, for heaven's sake. can you turn your radio down? We're off to a flying start. Hello, Allison.
Hi.
Hi, you're on.
This is my first time calling.
Oh, nice.
I just saw a buzzard in my backyard yesterday, poking around the garage, poking around the garbage container.
Yeah.
And I've been informed by the manager who runs the apartment here that there's a pair of them. They've been here before. Is that a common thing? This is Glens Falls, and the last time I saw a buzzard was doing some driving in Florida a long time ago. So I haven't seen one since. This is a buzzard.
Well,
it looked like a huge crow with a big funny face.
Yeah, you're right about that. First of all, what some people call buzzards is actually the New World turkey vultures. And I'm going to suggest that what you have there is a black vulture. First of all, they're another newcomer from the south to our area. They're very bold, very, assertive. They will they will come to backyard disposal, trash barrels, or what have you, and be more comfortable around people than its close cousin, the turkey vulture. The difference between the two this time of year is the black vulture has a black head, The turkey vulture
yes.
has a red head like a turkey. And so they are moving into the area. They like don't mind being around buildings, will oftentimes perch on top of houses or garage or barns. And, yeah, they're here.
Well, I saw one. It was very exciting. I haven't seen one in about 10 years.
Well, the buzzard is actually an old world family of birds related to our red-tailed hawks. They're a Buteo hawk species that are commonly called buzzards over there.
Ah.
And the name came over on this side, misapplied to vultures and sometimes to our regular hawks. But I suspect that's a black vulture that you have up there. And I'm surprised they're that far up north into Glens Falls, New York. So there you go.
Well,
and this Julie can attest that this Atlas project that's going on now will further document these range expansions, which are phenomenal.
Yeah, I think black vulture is a prime example of one of these expansions we're going to see. They're moving up to the north from coming from the south, whereas we have also like Merlin, which is a small falcon, a relative of the peregrine falcon, and they also have rapidly expanded across the state, and they're actually moving south, coming down from Canada.
Well, Allison, thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here. We talk birds today on the program. Jim, who is on the road. Jim, you're on.
Good afternoon. How are you today?
Good. Nice to have you here.
Nice to have you. I'm listening here from Connecticut.
Oh, great.
My wife and I live in Hampton, Connecticut, which is in eastern Connecticut, almost to Rhode Island.
Okay.
Now, something my wife saw the other day and pointed out to me, we saw our first hummingbird of the season. Now, with the warm weather being what it is this a semi-common sighting now? Usually I don't expect to see them till like the mid part of May.
Who wants that? Julie?
Yeah, I haven't really seen too many observations coming in of hummingbirds yet this year. But as you say, so it seems a little bit early to me. But as you say, it's been really warm, and a lot of birds this year are arriving earlier than normal. I'd say a week or two earlier than they have in the last few years. So it's very possible that you saw a ruby-throated already.
Rich.
There are a few reports of hummingbirds to our south, North Carolina and Virginia, for example, and with these persistent southerly winds that we've been having, I think that yes, they are arriving early, as Julie says, in some places unusually early. So I'm not surprised, and if you folks out there want to start early putting up a hummingbird feeder, it's not too soon, I would think, and perhaps you too will have a hummingbird coming right to your backyard any day now.
Well, Jim, thanks for that one. 800-348-2551 is the number on Vox Pop. It's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Paul in Poughkeepsie. Paul, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I live in the town of Poughkeepsie. And my wife indulges all my interest in birds. And about 3 weeks ago, we were at the Wappingers Creek Basin, and I saw two, what I'm going to say were golden eagles together. One actually grabbed the fish from the Wappingers Creek, landed in a tree, and I got to look at it for a very long time. Now, how would I know whether it was a migrating golden eagle or an immature bald eagle? We do have a lot of eagles around here.
Well, first of all, it was by water and it went after a fish. That yes. says right away that you had a bald eagle. Golden eagles are not usually found near water. That's not their thing. They like open fields, hillsides, wooded hillsides with open fields within clear view of them. The bald eagle, on the other hand, side by side with water. Fish-eating bird, go after the fish, take them back, and wolf them down. Now, the difference between the two is the, first of all, just look at the size of the beak on either one of them. The bald eagle has a huge honker of a beak. The golden eagle, not so much, more like a red-tailed hawk, a little a little bit of a beak. And then the pattern of dark, it was likely an immature bald eagle, mostly dark with some splattering of light white, gray patterns somewhere on the body under the feathers and the like. The golden eagle, the young ones, have a bold black and white tail. And all of them have a rather showy, surprisingly conspicuous golden mane or nape on the back of the neck. And that shows up well in a lot of lighting situations. So, grabbing a fish next to water, bald eagle.
Paul, what do you say?
I was really excited about possibly being a golden eagle. I did get a good look at its face and its beak, and I've seen the bald eagles, and they have a yellowish beak. This one had a dark-colored beak and no white at all. It was mostly brown and black.
Yeah.
But huge and just a lovely thing to see.
Yeah, right. Young bald eagles will have a dark bill, so that fits the bill.
So I guess that's what I saw. It was exciting to see it in action.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say also that on Sunday, again, my wife, she indulges me, but we were walking by the Wappingers Creek in a town park, and I did observe a bald eagle and its nest in a very improbable place. And I just wanted to know if anyone wants to know that. If they count these things, it's clearly the nest, and I actually got video of that one.
Cool.
Well, Julie?
So that's the main goal of the Breeding Bird Atlas, which is the project I work on, is to document where all the species in New York are breeding. So if you are interested, I would recommend getting an account, a free account on eBird. It's eBird.org, and start submitting your observations through there, check out the Breeding Bird Atlas website, and it will give you instructions on how to submit that observation just to the Breeding Bird Atlas as well.
What is that website, Julie?
The Breeding Bird Atlas website is eBird.org/AtlasNY.
Okay. eBird.org/AtlasNY. Paul, thank you for the call. 800-348-2551, the number. It's birds today. Julie Hart joins Rich Guthrie, and Sebastian is in Menands. Sebastian.
Hello. Question for Rich. I have what I believe are downy woodpeckers, and I live in a cedar-sided house, and these little birds are constantly pecking at the house, and I'm wondering, is there any way to discourage them or deter them from this?
Well, the first thing is to determine why they're doing that. It's not likely that it's interested in building a nest in your siding of your house. They prefer to build a nest in a tree. So the other possibilities are food or song. Now, some birds will use wood as a sounding board to and more or less as a percussion song, announcing their territory, fending off other males. The other thing is food. If it's a persistent thing and it's been going on for a while, that's more than likely what's going on. And I would be checking out what might be attracted them to the side of your house and be concerned about that to some extent.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot,
sir.
Sebastian. We appreciate it very much. Over to Anita in Colony. Hi, Anita.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm excited.
You bet. No problem.
My question being is, I'm an avid birder, and I take walks along the Mohawk. And on January 23rd, I was looking, of course, for birds, and there was a great blue heron. Now, isn't this a little early for them to be still around, or maybe he was overwintering, or I just was wondering about that.
Rich.
Well, a few great blue herons do overwinter in our area. If they have a source of open water so they can find some fish to feed on or the like. They will also actually go into open fields and hunt around there for meadow voles or mice that might be out in a cornfield someplace. But yeah, if there's a source of open water, a spring or a stream that's flowing, and a great blue heron is fortunate enough to find one in the middle of the winter, they'll move right in and hang out. It doesn't always work. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just surprised because I've been walking there for many, many years, and I've just never seen that in the winter. So nice.
Yeah, January would be an overwintering bird. The impulse to migrate doesn't begin until right about now when they start their journey north.
All right.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Anita. Now, Rich and Julie, but first, Rich, what is the difference in the physiology or mental makeup of a bird, such as a heron, that would say, you know what, I'm going to stick around on the Mohawk rather than migrate?
That's a very good question. And the answer is could be a number of different possibilities. The first is that it is sick or injured and just doesn't have the energy or stamina to migrate away.
Yeah.
And that bird, unless he gets real lucky through the winter, such as finding a good food source, such as a backyard bird feeder for some of the songbirds and the like, it's probably not going to have a good year. The other is that there are, in any population, there always seems to be a few adventurous ones, the explorers, the ones that test the system, push the edges. And in there, you might find a healthier, hardier bird that found a good spot and doesn't want to give it up. Hmm. And they will stay put. We see this sometimes with birds such as the red-tailed hawks. Most of them will migrate away. They'll be replaced by birds that migrate in over the winter. And a few of them will say, I got it good here, and I'm not taking any chances. If I give this up, somebody else might grab it. And so they hold on to their territory through the winter by not migrating. So it could be a range of factors such as that. And some of them are just simply wandered way off course, where you get some of these western birds that end up in upstate New York or Connecticut and the like, and find themselves, you know, got no choice. It's as far as I can make it. They're going to hang out until things get better and hope for the best.
So they're not that bright, is what you're saying.
Well, again, part of the adventure. This is how colonies and range expansions are set up.
Okay. Julie, you want to add anything, or shall we go to the next one?
Let's go to the next one.
All right. You asked for it. Mike in East Greenbush. Mike, you're on. Oh, that's a great start there, Mike.
Good afternoon.
Oh, hi. Yes, welcome.
Good afternoon. I got a question. I got a purple martin house, and I had quite a few purple martins years ago, but the past few years I'm getting more and more sparrows.
Ah.
And the purple martins aren't coming. Is there any way to discourage the birds from the birdhouse or encourage the purple martins? Or?
Okay.
Well, you can. There are some. I don't know the design, the layout of your. Whereabouts are you again?
I'm out in the country, in the woods, and
well,
I'm about 2 miles from West Sand Lake.
West Sand Lake. That's interesting. Well, here's the problem. The purple martins locally have been decreasing in numbers. Long, well-established colonies have disappeared up there at the Mohawk River, over in Kinderhook Lake, and other places. And the colonies have just simply petered out. And the reasons are a bit of a mystery. Yours seem to perhaps have hung on, but seems to be following the pattern of other martin colonies in the area. So I don't know the answer to and then the vacant nest will be taken over by whoever happens to be around, the house sparrows or the starlings. If you have an active colony and birds are, and martins are coming to it, and you want to encourage them to give them the nesting advantage, then taking proactive measures against the house sparrows, cleaning out the boxes this time of year so that they'll be vacant for the martins if and when they do return. If they're already occupied by their more aggressive house sparrows, then they're probably going to try to move on and find a new place. So now's the time to start preparing. The martins are just beginning to show up further south, down along the coastal areas where there are colonies still existing.
All right, Mike, we have to take a break, but thank you for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll blast through a few emails and then get back to the calls on Vox Pop with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here and Julie Hart. And Rich, this is the time of the show where you usually break out a list of events coming up. And, you know, usually you're here in the studio and you wave the piece of paper at me and I remember. I didn't remember it in the last break. Do you have anything for us today?
Sure do.
Okay.
Well, first off, a lot of the club activities have been canceled. So many things have been postponed, put on the shelf, or just completely called off. But there are some wonderful opportunities for some online learning venues. For example, there are live bird cams. These are cameras that are watching various feeders and bird feeding stations or nest boxes or nesting areas, ranging from eagles to hummingbirds and storks in Germany, Denmark, and Poland, to vultures in Spain, bird feeders in places like Japan, Brazil, and Canada.
Yeah.
This is at a site called birdcam.live.
Mm.
Just go check that one out, birdcams, plural, .live. And in there are some 530-some-odd bird cams that you can watch, from albatrosses in Hawaii to bitterns in Latvia.
Mm.
Some of the other ones is Cornell University has allaboutbirds.org. And there again, they have some bird feeders and also nest cams that you can look at. Allaboutbirds.org. This is Cornell University. And the Fish and Wildlife Service has learning opportunities for studying birds at home, fws.gov/birds. And one more thing is bluebirds. Bluebirds, the New York State bird, nest around here if given the opportunity. And you could go to the New York State Bluebird Society to learn about bluebirds and perhaps a little at-home project, build a bluebird nest box and set it up down by the lower 40. And that's NYSBS, New York State Bluebird Society.org, NYSBS.org. Learn about bluebird nest boxes and all about bluebirds. And then one more thing is the Trevor Zoo in Millbrook, New York, right down the road from us, is one of those sites on that birdcams.live opportunities. Keep your life list of birds seen at these feeders and nest stations. It's great at-home fun to share.
That's a great idea for those of us who are nearby the home. And, you know, I just, before we get to the emails here, Julie, has all of this stay-at-home stuff played havoc with the Breeding Bird Atlas Project?
I would say yes and no. I think that a lot of people are still, you know, taking the advice that it's safe to go outside for a little while, as long as you keep your social distancing. And so a lot of people are still going out and bird watching and atlasing, and that's bringing people a lot of solace at this time. Mm. But the people are staying closer to home. They're not going out as often as they were. So it is changing people's behaviors, but I think that it's still going on and still going strong.
Okay, good. Good. All right. Now, I tell you what, we have four emails here, and the lines are loaded, as it always is when we do a bird show. And so what I would ask our panelists to do is let's move quickly on the emails and just quick answers, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Mary in Delmar. Mary writes, I have a pair of cardinals zooming around my backyard. I assume they're coming They're competing for territory slash nesting sites. Is that something that female cardinals do? These two look like females, mostly gray, but a few reddish feathers. But I usually think of territorial behaviors as a guy thing, and that is from Mary in Delmar.
Yeah, so cardinals are one of the species where both the males and the females are extremely territorial, and actually both sexes will also sing too. So you will see a lot of male-male and female-female interactions at this time of year as they are setting up their breeding territories.
All right, this one's from Daniel in Chelsea, New York. I have attracted a bunch of starlings to my feeder as of late. They're quite aggressive and rude to the smaller chickadees and downy woodpeckers, which I prefer. Are there any redeeming qualities to starlings that you can share? I'd like to find ways to appreciate their presence since they seem to be here to stay. And that's from Daniel.
Listen to their song. They have something. It's not really musical, but their colors in the springtime when they start getting their what we would call breeding plumage, remarkable iridescent feathers and quite colorful.
Mm.
An interesting song, something of a mimic. So there are some redeeming values behind starlings. They also have ways of making their welcome less so.
This one is from Joanne. Speaking of Carolina Wren, just mentioned on the show, I live in Stuyvesant, New York. I had two Carolina Wrens at my suet all late fall and winter. They were singing that beautiful tea kettle song every day. Suddenly, in the beginning of March, they disappeared. I don't hear their song anywhere nearby. Where'd they go?
I hope they're still around. Yeah. When I hear things like that, I ask, are there any cats roaming around your neighborhood? I mean, the Carolina Wren is close to a ground feeder and very vulnerable to predation by something like feral cats and the like. Very sad.
This is from John, and then we'll go back to the phones. I've lived in New York all my life. I've only seen a bluebird once. I was at the Royal Mountain in Fulton County in the fall. Why don't I see them more often? Are they elusive? Do they avoid urban areas and people? I now live in Albany, and that is from John.
Go to Five Rivers Environmental Education Center in Delmar, New York, or some of the other parks or places where bluebird nest boxes are regularly put up and regularly maintained. The bluebird, when viewed against the sky, doesn't look blue, so you easily overlook. They look just like any other songbird in a tree until you get them with a background to block out the backlighting.
Yeah, all right. Now to the phones we go, and we'll try to get to as many calls as we can. Jennifer in New Windsor. Jennifer, you're up.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am calling because I have an 80-year-old holly tree on my property, big, huge holly tree that get covered in red berries every year. And around late February, approximately maybe beginning of March, late February every year, I get what looks like maybe 100 robins. I think they're robins. They look like robins. They've got an orangey breast. And they come and they spend 2 days on my property. I just can't believe how much sound and activity there. And they stay until there's not a single red berry left on that holly tree.
Good for you.
And then they disappear after 2 days. And I'm not sure if they're robins, but that's why I'm calling you, if you know what they are.
I bet they're robins. And also look for cedar waxwings in that bunch, beautiful cedar waxwings. And what happens is, and make it quick, is that the berries over winter freeze and thaw. And by the time spring comes around, the chemical composition has broken down to such that it is more nutritious for the birds, having a higher sugar content and the like. So they recognize these as more than ripe. They're ready. And they flock to the tree. And good for you. That sounds wonderful.
Well, Jennifer, thank you very much. We go now to Kernan in East Glenville. You're on.
Hello. And Ray, I so appreciate your work on this radio
station. Oh, thank you very much. You're very kind.
And I remember back in the days when I was at Department of Environmental Conservation, I had long conversations about conservation with your other guest.
Ah.
Furthermore, here we are looking out the back window of my house, and I see nothing but trees. Out the front window, I see nothing but houses. Here in the edge of suburbia, we have seen dozens of turkeys. I mean, in a bunch.
Mm.
One big tom with a hanging wattle, and then maybe 10 or 12 or 15 girls around him. and I'm not the only one who saw them.
Huh.
Well, there you go. They are found sporadically in larger numbers and in some areas absent. So depends on how well Tom did last year and all of his friends.
What do you mean, how well he did?
And they were, yeah, well, you know what I mean.
What do you mean by that, Rich?
I know what you mean. Well, the same thing is with us.
I didn't know they're keeping score.
They pick on the ground, and there's no chestnuts there, but they're just walking along and picking on the ground. Yeah. I wonder what they're eating.
Bugs and the like.
Okay. And one of our neighbors came walking along the road telling everybody she has a bluebird in her backyard. First time in many years.
There you go. The bluebird numbers are responding to the care and treatment, the love we're giving them. And the more the merrier.
Well, Kernan, thanks a lot for the call. We'll move it along here and try to get to at least a few more before we wrap it up. Michael in Vermont. Michael.
Hi, yes, I have a debate going on with my wife, and I thank you for your time.
Sure.
During the end of winter, we'll notice little areas near our dirt driveway will thaw out, exposing the stones. And many of the sparrows that have been feeding on our feeder will go over there and pick up a stone, it appears, and then fly away. And I told my wife that they need them for their gizzards. That helps them to break down food, and she disagrees with me.
Ah.
And now you guys are going to set it straight.
All right, let's let Julie handle this one. Go ahead.
I think they're probably actually going for the salt on the ground.
Interesting.
Rich, correct me if I'm wrong, but
I'm going to take the guy's side on this one.
Oh,
you're right.
Okay.
Well, I was told that my third generation Vermonter. I was told that by my grandfather, actually. That's what he said they were doing.
Yeah, any.
But her family comes from Norway, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, as with any of these grain-eating birds, grit is very important, and they'll grit alongside the road. And picking up salt is a good, being a hard crystal with sharp edges is
right.
A good grit material.
So same thing.
And it's out there, too. She's right. There is salt out there as well.
Yep.
But I know it's stones because I've seen it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Goes back to the dinosaur days, right, Julie?
Yes.
Exactly. All right. Let's go over to Maria in Olive Bridge. Maria, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have sort of three things, but I can cut it short because I know you have other people. Let's see. Oh, pileated woodpeckers, a pair that have lived on we're surrounded by woods and we're near the Ashokan Reservoir. And there's been a pair that have been around here for years. And some years we see them with feeding one of their babies that is already full grown, but they're still feeding it. But this year, with the bird atlas, we heard them for a couple of weeks and kind of saw them flitting through the trees. But the other day we saw the two of them pecking at a downed rotting log. And I just got an email from the Breeding Bird Atlas this morning, although we're not doing it because we're working from home. We're too busy. But I would try to. Would they be considered a breeding pair because they're on the same log and pecking away?
Julie.
Yeah, you could definitely record them as a pair. They're showing that they have a strong pair bond between the two of them.
Uh-huh.
It seems a little strange. A lot of the, most of the eagles now are already on their nest and incubating, and some of them should start having some young soon. So it sounds like it's possible that pair wasn't successful this year.
I'm sorry. I was saying pileated woodpeckers, not eagles.
Woodpeckers.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it said on the Breeding Bird Atlas that they were looking for woodpeckers.
Yes, that is true. Yes, I sent that email out this morning.
And we have photographs of them, too.
You have photographs. Okay.
Yeah.
We have photographs of them doing that, pecking at the log. Yeah.
Okay.
So
I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
That's a value of some kind?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Julie.
Yeah, so definitely, yeah, so that is still, that's pair behavior for the pileated. If they're both on a downed log, like if it's like horizontal, then it's probably not them building, a cavity for nesting. It's probably just foraging. But if you see them building a cavity in a standing dead tree, then that would be something that you could submit for that challenge that I have in the Atlas this month.
Maria, thank you very much, and we appreciate you keeping it brief for us. We only have about a minute here, but Mimi has been waiting in Germantown. Mimi, you have about 30 seconds to pose the question, okay?
I don't have a question. I just a follow-up. I had a great blue yesterday. I had killdeer last night. I had tree swallows and cormorants. And I have a breeding pair of Carolina wrens on my porch.
Wow.
Well, that brings me, mention the killdeer. That's the topic of my blog today in the Albany Times Union. Oh. TimesUnion.com.
Okay, cool.
Fantastic.
Killdeer.
Well, I'm watching this little pair, and she was at it last night until 7:30, and I couldn't see anymore. It was dark. She has been at this nest like crazy, the two of them, back and forth and back and forth. Really great.
Well,
it's a real treat.
Mimi, thanks a lot. We have to wrap it up here. We did have a call, and we only have about 15 seconds. Is there a bird app that you could recommend, either of you?
Merlin. M-E-R-L-I-N.
Okay. That caller's been waiting a long time, and she just hung up. Well, that is where we will have to leave it. Thanks, Rich and Julie, for being here. Support comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarriers and fabricators used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Capital Roots, working year-round to provide nourishment, community, and a sense of belonging for individuals who call the Capital Region home. CapitalRoots.org to learn more. Patricia Dalton-Fennell at Albany Health Management Associates, spotlighting RPP, the Restorative Justice Phase Practices Project for school, workplace, and community, AlbanyHealthManagement.com. At College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing, full-service gas, includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing, CollegeStreetMotors.com. Once again, thanks to the great Rich Guthrie and the great Julie Hart for being here today. Boy, a popular show. I'm sorry if we left you on the line. Thanks to all of you who got in with your questions. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, our producer, Jackie Orchard. Tomorrow, Barb Ravitz and Roger Giboni join us to discuss science experiments you can do at home with the family. Right now, stand by for the book show.